News on the March.
When it comes to biographies, it is often the outsized lives of phenomenal people that are most attractive to the artist. Take Citizen Kane, for example. It was a thinly veiled biopic based on the remarkable life of William Randolph Hearst.
America's Kublai Khan, Charles Foster Kane.
But it was also a vehicle for expression by another outsized figure, Orson Welles. This masterpiece that one extravagant fellow created out of the life of another hangs, however, on a pretty flimsy biographical conceit.
Well, 70 years in a man's life,
that's a lot to try to get into a newsreel.
That there is one word or moment that contains the key to a person's life.
Wait a minute.
What were Kane's last words? Do you remember, boys?
Yes, we did.
What were the last words he said on Earth? Maybe he told us all about himself on his deathbed.
Yeah, and maybe he didn't. Maybe it was just
all we saw on that screen was a big America.
Some shocking number of decades ago, I took a friend to a screening of Citizen Kane. And after sitting through the whole film, with all its magic and complexity, its remarkable images, great acting, carefully woven stories, it came to the end.
Rosebud.
And she said, oh, it's the sled.
Throw that junk.
Referring to the famous shot of an incinerated sled with the word Rosebud, Kane's last word, bubbling and curling in the flames. She had seen it as a pure biographical mystery story, which is fair enough. Even Welles seemed to know it was a flimsy premise.
I don't think any word can explain a man's life.
But it made a dramatic frame for this story of a great life.
No, I guess Rosebud is just a piece in a jigsaw puzzle.
The fact is, these outsized lives deliver a lot of built-in drama to the biographer, filmmaker, composer. They may be hard to wrestle to the ground, but everybody wants to try. A couple of years ago, J. Robert Oppenheimer, the complex physicist who led the Manhattan Project, which developed the atomic bomb, was the figure whose life inspired every kind of expression. Oppenheimer was worshipped for his scientific brilliance and magnetic personality, and later reviled when he tried to warn the world of the dangers of the bomb. His life inspired, among many other things, a play, The Love Song of J. Robert Oppenheimer, a prize-winning book, American Prometheus, an opera, Dr. Atomic, and a fictionalized book that pulled Oppenheimer into the present day, O Pure and Radiant Heart, by Lydia Millett. She began writing, she said, after reading voraciously the biographies of the scientists of that era.
They were public people as well as scientists, and they were very political and very powerful in a way that few scientists are today. And so all those things made a powerful cocktail for a story.
Biographies as a cocktail for a story. That's one way to put it. Add a dramatic plot full of wild contradictions and a turning point in world politics, and it becomes the stuff of grand opera.
Americans love a story where somebody goes high and then crashes low, and, you know, if they can resurrect themselves, all the better, be it Martha Stewart or Michael Jackson.
John Adams, composer of the opera Dr. Atomic.
Oppenheimer had that terrible vector in his life where he went from being an unknown, brilliant physics professor to being the most recognizable scientist, perhaps, in history, except for Einstein.
And then back down again, from celebrity to supposedly unpatriotic villain, adding just the right arc to the story. The opera takes place during the 2 weeks in July 1945, leading up to the explosion of the bomb. And the facts and issues of Oppenheimer's life radiate from there.
He's probably the most charismatic scientific figure in American history.
The interesting fact is, though, that you don't have to be the most charismatic figure in any history to inspire a great biographical treatment. The life of a classical composer, not that often remembered now, Frederick Delius, was the inspiration for a book, Delius as I Knew Him, which in turn inspired the filmmaker Ken Russell to make a remarkable film about him called Song of Summer in the late 60s.
I will tell Delius that you have arrived, and I'll call you when he is ready.
In this biopic, to end all biopics, the actor Max Adrian plays Delius, with Christopher Gable as his young and devoted helper. The life in question had not much influence, certainly not the global reach of a Hearst or an Oppenheimer. But the film tells us precisely what the impact was of this gifted composer on this one youth.
Now we better have well then stop then on a quarter note.
It examines in close-up the aching process of a composer, by this time too ill to record his own works, living inside his own brain, straining to communicate to someone who would need infinite patience to receive the messages.
A quarter note is a crotchet.
In the process, the film explores the very nature of composing and the complicated process by which a solitary art can be shared.
I'm pleased with what we did today, Eric. We must celebrate.
So often, the subject doesn't have anything to do with the quality of a biographical work. It's some cocktail, if you will, made up of history, chemistry, and the obsessions of the biographer. Ironically, the one thing that can be said about great lives versus the less globally important ones is that the great lives' artworks are more likely to be seen because of the built-in curiosity about the subjects. Song of Summer, the movie about Delius, I'm sorry to say, is impossible to see. It can be rented from only one dimly lit video temple in New York, or ordered from England in a format that isn't compatible with American equipment. While we can't be sure exactly why it's so hard to find, it would certainly help if it were about Michael Jackson, or Hitler, or Mother Teresa. As for Bob Dylan, I'd rather watch six actors try to evoke his presence than just one, even if the result is less revealing about Bob Dylan than it is about a filmmaker with a clever solution to a vexing creative problem. Namely, how to tell about such a familiar great life without resorting to impersonation and painful clichés. Even if I'm not there doesn't really solve the problem, it's worth watching someone try to find a new frame for an outsized life. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko. Rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times, they are changing.